Time is 9:00 in the morning. We have with us Senator Kukesh, Senator Geisel, Senator Meyer, myself, Walkowski, Senator Pasfan will not be with us today. We have two bills before us. The first is Senate Bill 208, which facilitates collaboration between state and local agencies in a state of emergency. The second is Senate Bill 29, which increases accountability and review of indirect state spending in the form of tax credits, exemptions, and other reductions in gross state revenues. We'll begin with Senate Bill 208. It's my hope that if the committee agrees, we can move this bill from our committee today. On March 6, Senator Pasfan gave us an overview of Senate Bill 208. The bill enacts the Alaska Intrastate Mutual Aid System, a comprehensive integrated system of assistance between state and local agencies. We heard testimony from David Gibbs, the Director of Emergency Operations in the North Slope Borough, and Jeff Tucker, Fire Chief of the North Star Volunteer Fire Department, both supported the bill. I have a few more letters before you that we've placed on your desk. Before we complete public testimony, can we get a recap of the intent of the bill from Senator Pasfan's aide, Anna Sorensen? And if you come forward, put yourself on the record.
Mr. Chair, do we need the committee solicitor before us?
Or do we have it before us?
We have adopted it.
Yeah. I have that motion M. here, so I was ready.
Just for the record, it would be M, backslash M.
It's actually backslash B.
B.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Yeah, both of them. It's on.
Yeah. Anna, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Anna Sorensen, and I'm staff to Senator Pasfan. Unfortunately, he can't be here. He's presenting Senate Resources legislation in the Senate Finance Committee this morning. But he asked that I convey his appreciation and for your time and consideration of this bill. As Senator Pasfan noted last week in his remarks, Senate Bill 208 is an essential piece of legislation that will provide a statewide framework for mutual assistance among participating political subdivisions in the prevention of, response to, and recovery from disasters. The provisions of the Alaska Intrastate Mutual Aid System were developed with the goal of supplementing existing regional or local agreements by establishing a comprehensive integrated system of mutual aid at a state level that will ensure an efficient and effective response to all hazards and disasters. The system, however, does not prevent participating entities from entering into supplementary agreements with other political subdivisions or impact current or future agreements. Though mutual aid agreements between neighboring political subdivisions are somewhat common, aid agreements may not necessarily exist between subdivisions that do not have a history of providing assistance to each other. As mentioned during the hearing last Tuesday, Interior Alaska recently faced this challenge when the Fairbanks North Star Borough encountered obstacles in providing timely aid during the 2009 flooding along the Yukon River to communities such as Eagle. And this was mostly due to a lack of existing mutual aid agreements between those communities. SB 208 would act as a safety net in similar situations where aid is needed, but no mutual aid agreement currently exists. Through SB 208, the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management will be tasked with playing an integral part in developing and implementing guidelines and procedures for the Alaska Intrastate Mutual Aid System. The Alaska State Emergency Response Commission, which was created under the Alaska Disaster Act, will facilitate the preparation and implementation of the system. The commission will also provide for review and make recommendations about the mutual aid system. The system would automatically include all political subdivisions. A political subdivision may elect to withdraw by having its governing body adopt a resolution stating that they no longer wish to participate. SB 208 further allows that a participating entity will have the sole discretion to withhold or withdraw requested assistance to provide reasonable protection and services within its own territorial limits. Some other details included in the mutual aid system that I can go over in detail later if you like include guidelines for requesting aid, what assistance a participating member may request, qualifications and employment of emergency responders, workers' compensation for emergency responders, reimbursement procedures for providing for aid provided by participating political subdivisions, and then, of course, some pertinent definitions. Senate Bill 208 is supported by the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, the Alaska Municipal League, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, AARP of Alaska, the Alaska Commission on Aging, the Division of Emergency Management, the Alaska State Fair Association, and the Food Bank of Alaska. Additionally, this bill has a zero fiscal note, which the division can explain in further detail. Thank you for your attention and consideration. There are several professionals online who can answer more detailed questions if I'm not able to do so. And I'm happy to go over the changes in the CS now or after public testimony.
Why don't you go over the changes in the CS right now?
Okay. The committee substitute for 208 addresses some concerns that were raised by both the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. I believe there's an explanation of changes that may have been provided to you, but if not, there were changes on page 7, lines 11 and 16, and then also on page 8, line 26. And what these changes do is provide for emergency service providers that contract with political subdivisions to be covered under the legislation. This was specifically designed to ensure that volunteer fire departments and their volunteers, whether firefighters or emergency medical technicians, were covered under the Alaska Interstate Mutual Aid System. This issue was of concern to the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association because much of their membership is comprised of volunteer fire departments. The second major change is the deletion of language on page 7, lines 17 through 20, and that was in the old version M. It's no longer in the version B. This change was made by the request of the borough due to the feeling that this language created an unacceptable level of risk for local governments regarding workers' compensation. I'm sure that David Gibbs from the Fairbanks North Star Borough Emergency Management could address any questions that you have about that section.
Okay, thank you, Anna. Any questions? Okay, I don't see any. We've got, we opened up public testimony, didn't get through. We've got a few people signed up. and I want to thank everyone. I know we had a number of people signed up last week, and we just couldn't get through them. So appreciate people coming back to testify again today. We've got Mike O'Hare online from Deputy Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Mike, are you there?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Yeah, welcome to the committee. If you could put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mike O'Hare. I'm the Deputy Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management under the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. First off, I just want to thank Senator Pascavan and especially Anna Sorensen for herding these cats to get to the this opportunity to bring this piece of legislation to you. We have been, the division's been working with Fairbanks North Star Borough and various, in a work group with various local emergency management representatives to bring this working draft, to you. And primarily it, as Anna had said, it primarily allows the, pre-development of these agreements, to be put into place prior to any disasters. If this mutual aid agreement was not in place, we would have to literally go to each community, to hundreds of communities, and have them sign a mutual aid agreement with one another. Statewide mutual aid agreement alleviates that. It mirrors the National Emergency Management Assistance Compact with other states, and it mirrors other states' activities with statewide mutual aid agreements. As you can tell, there is a zero fiscal note from our division. Primarily, we would incorporate a statewide mutual aid committee within the State Emergency Response Commission. This commission meets regularly. It meets formally twice a year, but the subcommittees meet regularly, and they would address the guidelines and develop guidelines and procedures required for the bill. So we are in support of this, and I am available to answer any questions. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. O'Hare. Questions? I don't see any. Let's move on to Dennis Brodigan. Dennis, welcome to the committee. If you could put yourself on the record, give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Dennis Brodigan. I'm the Emergency Services Director for the Matanuska-Susitna Borough, and I am speaking in favor of Senate Bill 208 as well. I'd like to thank Senator Passman for sponsoring this legislation. This is going to provide a great foundation for our interagency assistance during disaster events. I think, you know, all areas of Alaska have a finite resources available to them, especially in the early hours and days of a disaster event. I think 208 is going to go a long way to providing more resources to us at local jurisdictions faster, and will be a great benefit to all the citizens in their time of need during a disaster event. So the Matsu Borough strongly endorses 2008, and thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you, Mr. Brodigan. Questions? I don't see any. Next up, we have David Gibbs signed up. Mr. Gibbs, are you on for testimony or just for questions?
To Mr. Chair, I'm just on for questions. Thank you.
Okay, and you're from the Fairbanks North Harbor. Are there questions for Mr. Gibbs? I don't see any. Anyone else online wanting to testify? Don't hear anyone. Anyone else in the room wanting to testify? I don't see anyone. We'll close public testimony. Any final questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, I don't see anyone. It's a fairly somewhat complex piece of legislation. I want to applaud the bill sponsor for putting the time in and getting it, herding all the cats. Looks like a good piece of legislation. It's got a further referral to the Finance Committee, although it does have a zero fiscal note. Is there, what's the will of the committee? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move committee substitute for Senate Bill 208 version 27LS0611-B to the next committee referral with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the bill is moved. And Michelle will pass out the recommendation sheet. Okay, we'll now go on. Thank you, Anna. We'll now go on to Senate Bill 29, which calls for greater transparency and review of indirect state spending resulting from tax credits, exemptions, exclusions, and waivers contained in state law. Last Tuesday, we heard an overview of this bill from my staffer, Sam Gottstein. Sam stated that Alaska is one of the few, one of a handful of states in the country that does not provide the public and lawmakers with clear and comprehensive information on an annual basis about indirect state spending. This is despite the fact that tax credits, exemptions, and exclusions constitute a significant percentage of our annual spending, according to our rough calculations, as much as 15%. Last week, we heard testimony in support of greater disclosure from Mr. Matthew Gardner, Executive Director of the Institute of Taxation and Economic Policy in Washington, D.C., and Matt Wallace, Executive Director of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. Before we continue our discussion, I'd like Sam to quickly recap the information he provided last week. Sam, if you could come before us, give us your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Sam Gottstein, staff to Senator Wilikowski. As a brief reminder, the intent of Senate Bill 29 is really to ensure that everyone has basic information about these tax expenditures. The idea is to have this information provided to the legislature and the public so that everyone has a better understanding of where the money goes and if it achieves its the legislative intent, the stated objectives. Think tax credits with this kind of bill. Excuse me. I'll reiterate, as I did last week, that we spend more on tax credits annually than the budgets of the Department of Natural Revenue, of Natural Resources, Revenue, Environmental Conservation, Law, the court system, and the legislature combined. Since our hearing last week, Senator Wilikowski's office has worked with the Department of Revenue, Legislative Budget and Audit, Legislative Research, and Legislative Finance to find the right balance between making this information transparent and not putting undue burden on agencies. That's all as far as a recap. I think there's a committee substitute.
There is. There is a committee substitute backslash version E. Could I have a motion to adopt it for discussion purposes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 29 version 27 LS 0305 backslash E.
Okay, and I will object for so we can have an explanation. Sam, if you could go through and explain what was changed.
Sure thing. Hopefully there's an explanation of changes on everyone's desk now. I'll just run through it briefly. There were a couple changes. The first one, page 1, line 2, that more clearly defined and narrowed the definition of tax expenditures. In the title, we removed the words deductions and deferrals and added the word waivers. This was at the request of the Department of Revenue. We also did that on page 4, lines 20 to 21, so that's where the actual definition is. And we also, on page 4, lines 23 to 24, we added a section, a little bit of language, not a new section, to make sure that tax deductions are exempt from the definition. On page 1, line 12, to page 2, line 10, we added a new section. It's section 3. This is the part of the bill where we do the one-time analysis of whether it has a particular tax expenditure has achieved its legislative purpose. And we put it into a new section because we moved this authority from the Department of Revenue to Legislative Finance Division. I can go over why we decided legislative finance maybe after I run through the rest of the changes. We also, so again, this is a one-time analysis of whether a tax credit has achieved its legislative purpose, and it's done for any tax expenditure that exceeds $1 million in a fiscal year. After hearing back from legislative legal, there was some issue with how we had the language worded the first time, that we would have to go back to every single year to make sure that the tax credit didn't break that $1 million threshold. So what we have in the CS before you is the Department of Revenue would only have to look back to the year 2000 to determine if a tax expenditure has reached that $1 million threshold. The committee also may choose to amend this particular date, so as not to create too great of a burden. Next change, page 4, line 12, we just removed that old subsection C in version I and created that the new section 3 that I just discussed. Page 4, lines 15 to 19, there's new language saying that the Department of Revenue shall notify Ledge Finance if a tax expenditure has exceeded that $1 million threshold, as well as directs the Department of Revenue to provide the division with information necessary to complete the division's analysis. Lastly, page 4, line 25, we added a new subsection, changing the effective date on sections 1 and 2 to make them immediate in order to have important portions of the bill with no fiscal impact take immediate effect. That's all of the changes from version I to version E. If it pleases the chair, I can run through why we decided to have this one-time analysis in legislative finance.
Sure. Is there a question? Questions? Okay.
I'd like him to do that.
Okay.
So, as I mentioned, we spoke with the Department of Revenue, Legislative Budget and Audit, Ledge Research, and Ledge Finance, trying to find a good home for this job. As we heard last week, the Department of Revenue was a little concerned about doing this job. With that said, I'll run through the pros and cons, I guess, with each of these areas. For the Department of Revenue, the pros, they have economists, and more importantly, they have the raw numbers. They won't need to be transferring the information anywhere. It's all in-house. The con, or the major con, that we heard from Joanna Bales last time was that The Department of Revenue doesn't have any auditing or research experience, really. We also have seen that they would have a large fiscal impact on the department, or that this bill would have a large fiscal impact. And I guess another point would be that because the Department of Revenue is part of the administration, it's possible that different administrations can have a different take on each of the tax expenditures. So that's why for the other three departments, we looked to nonpartisan organizations and agencies. Legislative Budget and Audit, we looked at them next. They, as far as pros, they're the traditional audit section for government. They do a very thorough job and definitely nonpartisan. In terms of why we decided not to go with Legislative Budget and Audit, they would still have a large fiscal need. There would still be a large fiscal impact. They would need more auditors likely, would likely need to hire outside consultants. And really what it comes down to is because there are these national auditing standards that they have to follow, Legislative Budget and Audit would delve almost too deep into some of these issues. I have the reason why I have all this huge stack of papers is here's an example from Washington, the Joint Legislative Audit and Review Committee, looking at tax preference performance. This is the 2011 tax preference performance reviews. This isn't all of it. It's about 300 pages, and it's just if you get audit on board, they would do a very thorough job, but it just would, I think, be a little bit too much. It's a little bit more than what this legislation might be looking for. We just want a quick and dirty almost, is this tax credit working? Is this tax expenditure working? It would also, the point when we spoke to Legislative Budget and Audit, is that it would expand Ledge Audit statutory authority, so it would place a burden on some of the other requests for Legislative Budget and Audit, and it takes time to do these. Moving on to legislative research, we looked there next because they're experienced, competent researchers. We actually have, or I have, a legislative research report that they did on some tax credits, four of them. It's only, 12 pages long or 13 pages long, done in 2006, I believe. So they have some experience with this. They're also very good at aggregating information, finding quick answers, and they're nonpartisan. In terms of why legislative research might not be the best area, it's an expansion of the traditional role of legislative research. They're not auditors, nor are they economists. They're just more generalists, and it would require additional staff resources to complete this kind of one-time review. Lastly, we had legislative finance, which we decided to go with, at least at this point. They are well-respected, nonpartisan. They are comfortable with the budget, and so they're ideal for doing research on budgetary issues. They can run the analysis without any or many additional resources. The fiscal note that I believe you all have, once this one-time analysis kicks in, it would just be for $50,000 to hire a consultant for some parts of it. And in speaking to all of these different areas, legislative finance, I think, is a core belief, really believes in transparency in government. That's not to say that other groups don't believe in this, but it really seems like transparency is a core idea, which is what this legislation is about. In terms of why legislative finance might not be the best place, they have a little bit, they don't have as broad of a research experience. They're more just the numbers guys, if you will. But that's, I guess, a brief or not so brief run through of the different departments that we looked at. And as it's currently drafted in the CS, it would be legislative finance that would take this role. So that's a quick
discussion. Thank you, Sam. Questions? I don't see any. Senator Meyer.
One. I think, if I recall the fiscal note, a lot of the expense for revenue was labor costs, or was it technology, or was it both? And then, if technology is a factor, does that also is that also a factor of ledge finance as well?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, great question. The effective date on this one-time analysis portion, or really most of the legislation, is pushed back till July 1, 2015. And the reason why is the legislature last year appropriated about $34.7 million for the Department of Revenue to upgrade their systems. And we're hoping that by 2015, which is possible, that the Department of Revenue will have this system in place. As such, they should just be able to, with one guy, just click in with the system and have all the information generated. That was the intent of the appropriation last time, and so we're hoping that by putting in statute, then we can get this information, as well as get the one-time analysis. So, yes, it is an issue, but we think that with the effective date pushed back as it is, it won't be as much of an issue.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Boy, it'd be nice to have this before 2015, though. We may not even be here anymore, Mr. Chairman. But I don't know if there is any way to accelerate that without the proper technology. Okay, thanks.
Sam, is there a way to accelerate it before 2015, and would there be very high costs to do so?
To the chair, Mr. Chairman. That was part of what was reflected in the fiscal note last time. According to the fiscal note, it would require 8 full-time auditors, I believe, and technicians to go through all of the tax information manually. So I think that's close to $1 million if we want it sooner annually, which, is a policy call, but it seems like if we wait a few more years, then it will be, one person, if even that, to get this information.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess that is a policy call. I don't know how many millions we spend on tax credits, because we don't have a handle on our tax credits. So the million may be a cheap investment to get that information. We do have some major decisions to make on film tax credits, oil tax credits. I don't know when the education tax credits come up for renewal. So I don't know. It's just something we'll have to ponder, I guess, and talk to Mr. Teal as well. Maybe he could bring on some temporary contract folks to help accelerate this, us getting this information quicker. So thank you.
Good point, Senator Meyer. Any other questions? Okay, we do have an amendment, E.1, for the CS, and if I could get Michelle's going to distribute that right now. It's a simple amendment. If I could get a motion to adopt that.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
And I'll object. Sam, can you just discuss what this amendment does?
Sure thing. Amendment E.1 would change the date on page 1, line 14, and page 4, line 16, from 2000 to the year 2012. This has to do with the one-time analysis and the million-dollar threshold. With the effective date of 2015, what this means is the Department of Revenue would only have to look back 3 years to determine whether a tax expenditure has reached that million-dollar threshold. So that makes it a lot easier on the department to figure out if it meets the threshold in any of those years. If it was in any one of those years, then that tax expenditure would be subject to the one-time analysis by legislative finance, as is in the version of the bill.
Any continued objection to the bill? I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any further objection to the amendment? Okay, I don't see any, so the amendment is adopted. Anything else, Sam? Okay, thank you. We have David Teal here with us from Legislative Finance. David, thank you for making time to come down. And if you could put yourself on the record.
I'm David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division.
Thank you, and thank you for coming here. I know you're very busy this time of year, especially. Do you have any thoughts on the overall intent of the bill?
I think it's something that I'm very glad to see. It's something that I believe shouldn't be needed. Actually, it's something that you should expect the Department of Revenue to do without a bill. That said, the bill certainly doesn't hurt. It clearly spells out what you want to see, why you want to see it, and what you'll get out of it.
Okay. And does your do you have any thoughts about Legislative Finance performing the analysis in the bill?
Mr. Chairman, no real concerns as the bill has been changed. The earlier draft with the earlier effective date was problematic because until they can give us the data, you can't analyze things. As Senator Meyer mentioned, you'd like to see this information now. Well, we'd like to see it now, too. There are a number of things, and if I digress a bit here, for instance, we'd asked the Department of Revenue for a number of years to give us the gross tax on oil, so and then net out the tax credits. And they did not provide that until Senator Stedman finally made the request himself. And then they walked through it. And I thought it was very interesting, very valuable to see what that tax credit or exemption was costing the state, because otherwise you simply don't know. And to try to get that information outside of revenue is impossible. They simply can't share the information. It's all confidential. We can't look at anything. So by making it 2015 and expecting the tax management information base system to be able to provide the aggregate data, Ledge Finance's role in this is simply to say, here's how much the tax credit cost you. Here's the economic impacts that you may have gotten from it. And I don't think we can necessarily conclude that the two are related. And maybe I should get away from a political thing like the oil tax. And as Sam and I talked about, the jet fuel tax credit. It's, you know, a lot of people don't even know that it's there, but we exempt the tax for international carriers. Well, the intent of that tax credit is fairly easy to see. You want to attract UPS, FedEx, Japan, Korean Airlines, etc., to fly through Anchorage. They're here, so it worked. But we can't tell you that if you remove that tax credit, they'll go away. So I think, as Sam referred to it, it's more a quick and dirty analysis. We wouldn't, our fiscal note is very low because we wouldn't expect to do much more than say, here's what it's costing you and here's what you're getting out of it, as near as we can tell.
Do you see any problems with assigning this to the Legislative Finance Division?
No. Let me qualify that, as long as Revenue understands that we would have to get the information from them. This is not something that we can do on our own. Revenue would have to be involved.
And on the fiscal impacts, we've got a $50,000 fiscal note. Does that seem about right to you?
It does, as long as you're satisfied with what I've described as a brief analysis as opposed to an audit of their tax system and so on and so on. I'm assuming that you want a rough analysis whether this tax credit is working. And I don't think that you really need to audit the tax system itself to make sure that the information coming out of it is correct before you do that analysis.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Teel, do we have a gut feel for what we spend on tax credits now? Maybe it's somewhere here in the analysis, but just looking at all the different taxes we have here, I didn't know we had some of these. There's a gas storage facility credit. There's credits to the fish taxes. There's of course education tax credits, community development quota credits, scholarship contributions credits, fish landing tax credits. I mean, it just goes on and on. Do we even have a feel for how much we spend on tax credits?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think that's the point of the bill, is that I don't. I'm not sure if anybody does.
Not even a gut feeling?
Well, we know film tax credits allow up to $100 million, but, you know, we know that, for instance, the Whale movie was a $10 million tax credit. We know that oil tax credits are quite large. Most of these tax credits, I have no feeling at all, for instance, for education tax credits or the cigarette impact, the jet fuel, I think is something we could probably figure out. But you're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't have a real good sense of how many hundreds of millions. And most of that is oil tax credits, but certainly there are others that are less well known.
Well, Mr. Chairman, yeah, I would imagine just like oil is 90% of our revenue, the oil tax credits are probably 90% of our tax credits. So the focus probably should be on that, and maybe film tax credit, because we know that's a big number as well. But I do think that, I understand that's the purpose of this bill. We need to get a handle for what we're spending on tax credits, and then conversely, are we getting the benefit of these tax credits? And if so, what kind of benefit are we getting? I mean, maybe we should stop. Maybe we don't need them anymore. Maybe the cost outweighs the benefit. I think that's what we're trying to figure out. Thanks.
No, Senator Meyer, well put. I mean, that is exactly the intent of the bill, is just to at least get a rough sense of how much we're paying out and whether or not there's it's something we want to continue to do or increase or decrease. Any other questions for David? Okay, I don't see any. Any other comments, David?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. I want to thank you for coming down. We do have Joanna Bales online, the Deputy Director of the Department of Revenue's Tax Division. I want to thank you, Ms. Bales, for your assistance that you've provided my office in reviewing and refining the bill. We very much appreciate your insights and willingness to work with us. And would you mind putting yourself on the record, Joanna? We may have a few questions for you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Joanna Bales. I'm the Deputy Director of the Tax Division.
Okay. And as you know, we have a new version of CS/E before us. And do you have any remaining concerns with the new language of the new CS?
Mr. Chairman, you know, I haven't looked at it completely in depth. I was concerned initially about the year 2000, but I see that amendment will take care of that, because that would have required us to go back and analyze all these tax credits and exemptions for the last 12 years. And as was stated earlier, we would have to do that all manually, even though going forward for the first couple of years, 2012 through 2015 or 2016, we'll still have to do that manually. It would only be those 4 years. I would like to make a comment, if that is okay, regarding Senator Meyer's question about how the amount of tax credits and information on that. Our annual report that we put out every year, and I believe most legislators do have a copy of that. In Figure 3, tax credits are identified by program type. So we do provide information about the number of credits or the amount of credits that were claimed in each program. Things like the fuel, it was called a credit, the fuel exemption for the tax on fuel used in foreign flights. I mean, that's not identified because that's not a credit. It's actually an exemption from the tax. And we don't necessarily get all the information about how much fuel is used. We get most of it, but there's some that we don't. So that would be something that this bill would require then for us to report. But like I said, the credit information is all every year reported in our annual report, except for in the oil and gas production tax. Not in the annual report doesn't show the credits that were used, but the revenue sources book does identify the credits that are given in that program. So the information is readily available.
Senator Myers, a question.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I do have a copy of the fall 2010 revenue sources book. Is that the one you're referring to?
The revenue sources book has information, some more detailed information. It identifies all the state revenue, not just what Department of Revenue has. It's actually the Tax Division annual report. It's a different report that does have all the tax credit information in that.
Okay.
And if you don't have a copy of it, we're happy to give that to all legislators, and it is online.
Okay. Well, I think I probably do have it here. I guess my question is there somewhere that just shows a total dollar amount of all the tax credits?
Senator Meyer, you know, I'm not 100% sure that we've done that. I'd have to, in the revenue sources book, we do have that appendix that shows all the credits and the amount that was claimed for at least, I think, the previous fiscal year and then projected. But I'm not sure if it actually sums it up at the bottom.
Well, I do
I have a copy of that with me right now.
Yeah, Senator Giesel pointed out the page here I think I'm looking for, and it shows for fiscal year total all credits of 436, and then fiscal year 2010 at 670, and then fiscal year 2011 700. Does that sound about right?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes, that sounds about right. And then that detail by program can be found in the annual report.
Okay.
But again, those are for the credits. That's not for the tax exemptions, and there are a number of those. I count approximately 24 tax exemptions that are provided in tax programs, and on last count, at least in 12 of those tax exemptions are over $1 million.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Other questions? And Joanna, as far as the fiscal impact to Department of Revenue, what's your projection with the new bill?
We would expect we'd need at least one position to go through and compile all of this data. The credits actually don't cause us much problem because we already pulled that information together. It's the tax exemptions. That's information we'll really need to dig through the tax returns to find. And we may even need to contact taxpayers. I mean, as I've gone through all of this and tried to think about what all these exemptions are. So we expect it'll probably take us at least one position to compile that data every year.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, other questions for Joanna Bales? I don't see any. Do we have any other comments about the bill or discussion about the bill? My office, just in drafting the bill, internally decided to put it in Ledge Finance. That seemed to us an appropriate place. I don't know if committee members have strong feelings about moving it somewhere else. If people are happy with that, yes, Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to ask Joanna what she thinks. I know when I was the finance co-chairman, we had a good relationship between Department of Revenue and Ledge Finance, and so I guess I don't see any problems with that and think that they would welcome the assistance, but I don't know.
Joanna, did you hear that question, Joanna?
I did. Through the chair, Senator Meyer. I mean, we're fine to work with any agency on this type of analysis. I think, you know, the issue for us initially was the type of additional analysis outside financial audits, because to us reading this bill and based on testimony, it appears that the legislature would be looking for performance audits of how these credits, you know, what basically has been the state's return on investment. I'll have to, you know, be candid here. I'm a little surprised with Ledge Finance stating that they can analyze all of these tax credits and exemptions for less or approximately $50,000. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, to me, at least in my mind, if you were doing this type of analysis, you would want to contact taxpayers, find out, you know, what they've done with this credit, if they've employed more people, how many jobs were created, were they permanent, were they temporary, did businesses expand into other areas because of these tax credits, and just a whole host of questions that would come to mind. And I really, I'm a little surprised to think that, I mean, like I said, we've got 24 at least tax exemptions that I was able to think about off the top of my head. We have 21 tax credits, and to do any type of an analysis that I think policymakers would want to look at, I would be surprised if that could be done for $50,000. Just kind of our take on that.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions for Joanna? Okay, Joanna, maybe if you could just hold on the line, because we have David here, and maybe get a response from David. If we could, if you'd just put yourself back on the record, David.
And David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance. And Mr. Chairman, Joanna may be right. That's why I look at this as it's something that the Department of Revenue would probably be best at doing. They know who pays the taxes. They may be able to release that information to us, but they're not going to be able to release individual taxpayer information to us. We know that. And we were looking at it as aggregate information. We can look at Department of Labor statistics. That doesn't really cost anything to go to the research and analysis section there and say, you know, again, I'll just use the jet fuel as exemption as an example. Without knowing exactly who is getting how much benefit from that, it's difficult to even say we're going to be contacting all or a number of the beneficiaries. So we would look at it as, well, we know some of them, and we can contact the Department of Labor and find out how many people are employed with those. But I'm not sure that you're ever going to reach a real conclusion here unless you're willing to step out and say that if this exemption were repealed, UPS or FedEx or someone would pull out and Anchorage would no longer be a hub. We're not going to be able to do that. No one's going to be able to do that. So, as I said, I may be thinking of the analysis as a simpler task than other people are looking at it. There's nothing wrong with that, except you get a low fiscal note. The only problem with a low fiscal note is that you don't get much money, but it doesn't matter to us right now because FY16 is several years away. And if you want more than I think you want, we'll ask for more money. The fiscal note doesn't lock us into an amount. But if you want the quick and dirty type analysis, I think it can be provided for a relatively small amount of money, and there's a 7-year cycle on these reviews. And if there are 21 of them, that means you really only have to do 3 a year. So it's not like you're doing every tax every year. So I don't know, at least that's the way I understood the bill, and I could be wrong on the 7-year cycle, and also could be mistaken about what kind of analysis, how in-depth you want that analysis to be.
Okay, thank you, David. Follow-up questions? And I'll just say from the perspective of writing the bill, we originally thought that the best place, a good place for this would be Department of Revenue. We got the $1.7 million fiscal note. We started to talk about it. There didn't seem to be a whole lot of desire by Department of Revenue to have this. We started talking to other branches. Ledge Finance is nonpartisan, so there would be the politics would be excluded from this, which we thought was a plus, and they could do it for a lot less than what Revenue could do. I know Revenue is extremely busy dealing with the overhaul of the tax system in their new computer system they're getting, and so from our perspective, it just seemed you had a nonpartisan division that really this seems right up their alley and could do a good job at this and could do it very affordable. So that just seemed to us to be a good place, a better place to put it. Senator Geisel had a question. Was that for David?
Well, I'm not sure who it's for, Mr. Chair. It sounds like Mr. Teal is not including the tax exemptions that Ms. Bales referenced. So it sounds like it's not actually going to be that comprehensive. I can't tell in the bill itself if the exemptions are included or not.
And let's call Sam up.
For the record again, Sam Gottstein, staff to Senator Wilikowski. Through the chair, Senator Geisel, the tax exemptions are included. Specifically, the fuel example with foreign flights, that is technically a tax exemption. And it's both in the bill title and on page 4 when you look at the definition of what tax expenditures are. It should include exclusions and exemptions in that definition.
Thank you. Yes, I see it. Mr. Chair, I guess my other concern was Mr. Teal's reference to using Department of Labor data. We know that that data is flawed. It's not particularly accurate in many ways. And so I guess that was another concern that I had about the accuracy of the product this would be producing.
Okay. Did you want to address that to Mr. Teal?
Or I'm not sure. It's a question, more of a comment.
Okay. Any response, David? Okay. The bill does have a further referral to the Finance Committee. We can hold the bill over for another hearing. We can move the bill today. If people want to think about it, I'm open to the will of the committee. I think this is I think this would be a good piece of policy to get something like this in place. I think it'd be good for the state. Any further discussion? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it's fine to move forward as you have proposed here in your bill. I think we just need to understand it's not going to be thorough, comprehensive, that we would have gotten with the original version of the bill. But I think at this point in time, any information is better than no information. And so I guess with that word of caution, I'm fine with moving it on.
And I would just add, there is always the opportunity for us to request further analysis, like we're doing with the film tax credit. You sort of get there can be a point where it becomes very expensive. And with the film tax credit, there is an audit going on. I believe they've hired 6 auditors to analyze that. It's the balancing act and trying to figure out how much we want to spend and what we want to spend. So the idea of this is to get the rough information out there, and then we always have the opportunity and the ability to go in and do further analysis of it. So if the any other discussion by committee members? Okay, I don't see any. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Meyer?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that we move committee substitute for Senate Bill 29 version backslash E as in Edward as amended to the next committee referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Is there any objection? Any discussion?
Maybe I messed up here.
That's fine. We're going to get a new one from Department of Revenue.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I need to add on to that motion that we're going to get an additional fiscal note from the Legislative Finance Division.
From Department of Revenue?
Department of Revenue.
Okay, maybe I should start over. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 29 version E as amended from the committee with attached fiscal note from the Legislative Finance Division and a new fiscal note from the Department of Revenue forthcoming with individual recommendations.
Okay, thank you.
Is that better?
Thanks. Objection? Okay, I don't see any. The bill is moved from committee. You could just hold on for a minute and sign the recommendation sheet. And with that, we're adjourned.